From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Katie Presley. We've been raving about Courtney Barnett's sense of humor since her performances at New York's CMJ Music Marathon 2013. And today, she's going to be our guest DJ. The Melbourne guitarist and singer pairs witty lyricism with deadpan delivery, a combination that's made for two brilliant EPs and now one of our favorite albums of 2015. Sometimes I Sit and Think, and Sometimes I Just Sit. Courtney just played two impeccable nights at the 930 Club here in D.C. Between shows, she came to NPR and joined Bob Boylan as our guest DJ. Bob asked her about her writing habits on the road, her inspirations, and how important her family was in encouraging her interest in music growing up.
One of the things that I loved about last night was standing in front of me was a father and a daughter. Standing to my right just a little bit was a father and a daughter. I was there with my son, and I love that. There's something about your music that feels intergenerational, you know, that feels like it can connect with all sorts of stuff, all sorts of people.
It's a nice feeling for me. Like, it's always such a varied crowd, and everyone I talk to has a different story about how they found the music, or, yeah, I really enjoy that side of it.
Yeah, I do too. Was there something in your family? Did your family share music together in any way? Is that something that ever happened to you?
It was pretty just low key. Like, Dad listened to a lot of jazz music, and Mum listened to classical music. And
neither do I hear in your music, right?
Maybe hidden somewhere deep down, but yeah, they didn't have any, like, you know, hidden like Beatles records or anything that I discovered. Nah, there was a couple of ABBA records. I kind of just found all my music through my older brother, and then at school, just through, I don't know, lots of people at school listen to kind of trashy, like, radio hit music.
Mm-hmm. Your older brother's name and his age, what's the difference in age?
He's 4 years older than me. So,
that's good.
Yeah, so it was a kind of, you know, I looked up to him and wanted to do everything he did and all that stuff. So, his name is Blake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you each have separate bedrooms? We had
bedrooms across the hall from each other, and we used to, and he pretty much had music going all the time, and so I could just sit in my room and listen to it. And we had a neighbor. Two neighbors, Nick and Josh, who made like mixtapes for us.
Burned on CDs, I assume. Yeah.
No, on cassettes, just before we got our first CD player. And so that's kind of all we had, because we didn't have any other music. So we kind of listened to what they gave us, and it was like Nirvana and Hendrix and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Guns N' Roses and all that kind of stuff.
Not a bad selection. Nice to have neighbors.
Yeah, it was good, because otherwise it would have just been, I don't know, ABBA.
What was radio like?
Very commercial, like the stations that I knew of then when I was, I don't know, 10. Yeah, just those really horrible, which I just can't stand listening to now.
Could you at all even then?
Yeah, I think I just didn't know any better.
Right.
I thought that's what music was and that's how it worked.
So what was the moment was it the mixtapes? What was the moment where you realized, hey, they're not playing this and I like this? And
yeah, probably the mixtapes, you know, just hearing music that someone, you know, who I know hands to you and say, I reckon you'll enjoy this. Like, that's got so much more power than like everything else.
Yeah, I can't imagine hearing and knowing ABBA, and then which I have a sweet spot for them.
I do too.
At times, but hearing Jimi Hendrix and after hearing what might be on the radio.
Yeah, that was a pretty big, you know, a big step. And then, so then I started I started playing guitar because they were playing guitar.
What age might you have heard the mixtapes, and what age did you start playing guitar?
Maybe I started playing guitar when I was about 10, maybe 7-ish. We probably started kind of listening to all the tapes, I guess.
it's hard
to think back, yeah. But then when I, you know, they started teaching me songs on guitar, all those boys.
Did they being the neighbors?
Yeah, the mixtape neighbors, Nick and Josh, and then my brother, Blake, and they all kind of started playing guitars when they were teenagers, and I started copying them, and they'd teach me songs, and And then when I finally started getting lessons, my guitar teacher was like, hey, check out, you know, the White Album and Grace by Jeff Buckley. And, you know, he just kind of showed me things. So it was like another level of discovery.
Well, you find it hard? I mean, first of all, you had to deal with the left-right thing, right? You're a left-handed guitar player.
Yeah.
I would imagine your teacher's probably righty, and maybe even your mm-hmm. neighbors and brother were righties.
Yeah, well, I kind of learnt upside down on their guitars. And then when I started getting lessons, I got a left-handed guitar. But, yeah, so I started learning properly.
Was it easier?
Yeah.
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 One of the reasons to like Jimi Hendrix, I guess.
Yeah.
Did any of that stuff make you actually want to spend money, like buy any of that music? Was it a record store you'd hang out at or go to? Or like sometimes it, when you grow up, like that commitment to like taking money out of your whatever, however you might have earned it, and going to buy a record. Often, I mean, most people can remember that because it's life-changing in some ways.
Yeah.
You commit yourself to something.
Yeah, because it's kind of all I was interested in. I just started when we got our first CD player.
What year?
It must have been, the first CD I got was Nevermind. But it was years after. And then, yeah, I started buying CDs every week. I go to the CD shop after school and spend my pocket money. and Rolling Stone magazines and stuff. I just got obsessed.
So you listen to a lot of music and, I mean, powerful songs, a lot guitar-driven, you've mentioned, the Nirvana, you mentioned Hendrix.
Mm.
Words, so important to you, my favorite. You're my favorite lyricist, flat out. and so at some point it happened to you. You heard a song and it may have been the words over the guitar.
Yeah, and not even so much, I mean, you know, not to say that Hendrix or, you know, the lyrics, I reckon those lyrics are just as good. But, yeah, when I was in grade 10, so 16, my English teacher set a class one day to pick apart this song called To A Door by Paul Kelly. And so we had to go through the lyrics and figure out what every word meant and why he used this word instead of that word and, you know, descriptive. And I think that was a bit of a moment because I'd been writing poetry and like playing guitar and stuff all up until then, but I think it just hit a different level. And because there were so many familiar, you know, Australian locations, and a lot of it was just so familiar, so maybe it connected a lot more.
You mean in the song, the words talked about places?
Yeah.
We should listen to it because this is a really cool song by Paul Kelly. It's called To Her Door, or Door, depending on where you're from. I'm going to actually play the whole song here because you can't get the beginning of the story without getting the end of the story. So.
They got married early, never had no money. Then when he got laid off, they really hit the skids. He started up his drinking. Then they started fighting. He took it pretty badly. She took both the kids. She said, I'm not standing by to watch you slowly die. So watch me walking at the door, at the door, at the door. She said, shove it, Jack, I'm walking at your fucking door. To her door, to her door, to her door.
came in on a Sunday, every muscle aching, walking in slow motion, like he'd just been here. Did they have a future? Would he know his children? Could he make a picture and get them all a fit?
I had no idea what a silver top was.
Yeah, taxi cab.
Uh-huh. And when you took apart these words, and was it an English class? Is it?
Yeah, it was just a grade 10 English. And yeah, I think he was just kind of, our teacher was pointing out, you know, that those kind of, I don't know, methods of writing and the kind of narrative. And, you know, something like in the second verse or something, it talks about going to the buttery. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but I think it was a like a rehab thing in Sydney or Melbourne. Uh-huh. So yeah, you know, just like learning what little parts of the songs were, which you might otherwise kind of just brush off.
My favorite part of this song, the reason I think it's a great song, is the question: would he do this? Would you don't know what happens in the story?
Yeah.
Right. He takes his. Goes through recovery after being booted out and goes and sees her again, and you don't know what's going to happen. And I love that about the song. I love that about the storytelling.
Yeah.
Do you find you were writing poetry? Were you writing poetry and songs? Would you say they were the same? Were they?
No, I think they were kind of different. When I started playing guitar and learnt enough chords to make up my own songs. Sometimes they do. They definitely go together, but sometimes they don't. They deserve their own space.
Mm-hmm. Was this a song that helped? Would something like that help you write? Did it help you make a better song and story? Because your songs are so story oriented.
Yeah, I mean, I reckon when I heard this song, it probably opened up seeing stories in a different way and how they can develop. And such a simple little story can have so much impact when it's drawn out. Mm-hmm. And then I started listening to Paul Kelly and Darren Hanlon.
Who opened up for you last evening. Tell me just a little about Darren.
He's been around for ages. He's got a couple of albums, but he's one of the first live kind of gigs I went to when I was 18, and has just always been such a huge influence on my songwriting.
He too, a storyteller?
Yeah. He just travels around and collects these amazing stories and talks to people and actually observes what's happening in the world around him to, you know, pass on. And yeah, it's really inspiring.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I try. I think I do. I think a lot of the time I walk around in a bit of a daze. But, you know, I think sometimes you've really got to use a different part of your brain, because we're so used to kind of being switched off or switched on to, you know, something else that distracts you from what's happening.
Yeah, the idea of walking up to somebody who you see on the street and just asking them about themselves, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that, but it's almost always rewarding.
Yeah, I think people kind of have started to find it threatening, you know, it's like, why is a stranger talking to me? Well, you know that. Why is that person being nice to me?
Right.
That's so weird.
Yeah. But it's nice when you're sitting next to someone on a train or a subway and you just can strike up a real conversation.
Yeah.
Or it happens more on planes because you're there for a long time.
Yeah.
So do you write when you travel, when you're on tour? Is that a different part of the brain?
I write I keep basically like a journal, just like a day by day, just to kind of keep my brain ticking, you know, and just writing. And you might just start writing about boring what you had for lunch, and then suddenly something comes out. So I think it's just about, yeah, keeping the kind of channel open or something and letting it go.
You used a sort of a hand gesture. Do you handwrite or do you type?
Yeah, handwrite. I started trying to keep typed.
Hands moving, like fingers.
But it's just, yeah, it's harder. I don't know.
When you delete
stuff, it's gone. Whereas I like that when you write, you make mistakes and you cross it out, and you can still, sometimes the bits you cross out are actually the good bits. You come back like a year later and what looked really cringy at the time is great. But when I was doing the album, I was typing a lot of it when I was kind of finishing the songs. And yeah, you just lose lines, like they could have been great, but in the moment you delete them and then they're gone and you can't remember them.
You should take the characters and turn them into strike-through characters instead of delete.
Can you do that?
Yeah, just highlight and go, and there's a little pull down that, or I don't know what computer you use, but there's a character called a strike-through character. And you just turn them all into strike-through, so it'll be like a line going through them. That'd be fun.
Okay.
In your life, has there been a song that changed you? Paul Kelly, you mentioned, is that one? Something that made you do something perhaps that you just never thought to do before?
Oh, God, I'm sure. That song always sticks out for me just because of that kind of moment that I had with it that kind of started, you know, a bit of a snowball of change. But, oh, man. Well, I remember when I first heard Wilco, and that was like a year or so after I released my first EP, and I heard a bunch of songs on like someone's shuffle. And yeah, I don't know, that band, it just kind of stood out as something different. And it was kind of, again, like a bit of a life-changing musical moment for me.
Song in particular?
Handshake Drugs, I think, would be the one that stood out.
I was chewing gum for something to do. The blinds were being pulled down on the dew. Inside out of love, what a laugh, I was looking for you. Saxophones started blowing me down. I was buried in sound. Taxi cabs are driving me around to the handshake drugs I bought downtown. Drugs I bought downtown. You were translating poorly. I felt like a clown. I looked like someone I used to know. I felt alright.
Talking while the song is playing, a little about seeing this band. This song can get kind of pretty explosive.
Yeah.
And I actually think, and Wilco is probably one of the best American live bands there is. And A, they have the songs, and the players are just so good in this group. And you've seen them once, you said.
Only once, yeah.
Fix that.
I'm waiting for the next time.
You got to cross paths with them somehow, some way.
Yeah.
Around about. What is it about this song that you feel is so important to you? They have so many.
Yeah, what is it? It's hard to, I've never been good at putting into words, but for one thing, that line, exactly what do you want me to be? I think that's, I don't know, that just kind of punches you right in the, mm-hmm. in the heart. I love it. But just the general groove and the three chords, it's just like this transfixing kind of, I don't know, it goes for like how long?
About six minutes, six plus, yeah. Starts with that great piano.
Yeah.
You don't know where it's going to go.
And it's just kind of dreamy, like you disappear into it, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it all, like you said, just falls apart in the guitar at the end. It's incredible.
Something about hearing all those frequencies, and it's hard to describe why guitar feedback feels so powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and in one level, you walk in a room and you say, oh, what a bunch of noise, turn that off.
Yeah.
But in the context of what just happened in this song, that's not true.
Yeah, it's the contrast or something, the, you know, beauty in the contrast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If we pick this as a song that you felt changed by, like try to pinpoint what might it be, would you have tried to write differently or?
Well, I feel like I'd kind of written this bunch of the first EP, my first EP songs, and then I discovered, you know, this band. And so, you know, from then on, I'm sure, I mean, everything that comes into your life changes it in some way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels like a lot of those songs that I'd done on the first EP were kind of, you know, like they knew what was coming, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like they, because I was trying to write kind of really simple, repetitive, you know, one chord, two chord songs, and find those the kind of contrasting moments. But I think apart from the songwriting and yeah, the general writing, the dynamics in the playing has been a pretty big thing for me, like from then on going into studios and making more music and just being really aware of how powerful that actually is,
mm-hmm.
you know, on top of the song itself and the lyrics and the music, you know, starting super quiet and beautiful piano and whatever, and then crunching into something huge and ugly but beautiful.
And like then what it does to the words, I mean, how it makes words come alive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what Wilco does really well. What your new record does really well too. I'm gonna play something from that. We talked a little about that, and then we can talk about one of your songs, and then we'll go back and play.
Sure.
Pick me some more of your faves. What should I do?
You said we should look out further. I guess it wouldn't hurt us. We don't have to be around all these coffee shops. Now we got that percolator. Never made a latte greater. I'm saving $23 a week. We drive to a house in Preston. We see police arresting a man with his hand in a bag. How's that for first impressions? This place seems depressing. It's a Californian bungalow in a cul-de-sac. It's got a lovely garden, a garage for two cars to park in, or a lot of room for storage if you've just got one. And it's going pretty cheap, you say. Well, it's a deceased estate. Aren't the pressed metal ceilings great? I see the handrail in the shower, a collection of those canisters for coffee, tea and flour, and a photo of a young man in a van in Vietnam. And I can't think of floorboards anymore, whether the front room faces south or north. And I wonder what she bought it for.
Preston from Sometimes I Sit and Think and Sometimes I Just Sit. Or did I leave out a just somewhere in
no,
the
writing? No, that's perfect. Okay,
and I first heard that when you played Tiny Desk last April. And anybody who wants to should go and watch it, because it was very sweet. It was just you and your guitar. But you'd given me a list of things you wanted to play today. And one of the things that you wanted to play was a song by Talking Heads. You want to introduce it, and I want to make a connection, but okay. I'm going to do it after we hear the two songs.
Yeah, Once in a Lifetime, Talking Heads.
Do you remember where you first heard?
Yeah, I do, actually. It was in art class in grade 12, so I was 17, 18.
What was the name of the art school?
It was just
an art class.
You know,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. But it was cool. We had a cool teacher who'd let us listen to music. And, yeah, my friend Rose, she just had all this cool music that she kind of introduced me to, which I, again, hadn't heard of. just, you know, showed me, like, the Pixies and Talking Heads and... Television or something, and just, you know, stuff that I didn't know of. And so we'd sit in class and faff around and listen to music.
Good. Let's hear it.
And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. Water flowing underground into the blue again. After the money's gone. Once in a lifetime. Water flowing underground.
And you may ask, and you may ask yourself, where is that large automobile?
same as it ever was, 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 same as it ever was. Water dissolving and water removing. There is water at the bottom of the ocean. Under the water, carry the water.
So my connection between these two songs, tell me if I'm far-fetched here, but I think of what Depressin talks about, which is basically going sort of house shopping and then realizing this life that as beautiful and can draw you in the storybook world of growing up and getting a home and having all these material things, right? That's you kind of look and hold back and say, whoa, I mean, not for me, basically. And then and Once in a Lifetime seems to be, to me, a song about somebody who wakes up and realizes all these things, again, material things, and what am I doing here, you know?
Yeah.
And I love those songs that sort of question what many of us grow up to think is a dream and questions the dream. And I think that's what I find in those two songs.
Yeah, I think it feels like it's a very constant theme in my songs anyway, that kind of purpose searching, you know. I think everyone can kind of relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know.
What, your attraction to this song? I mean, obviously amazing bass player, and you have an amazing bass player in Bones.
Yeah, Bones, definitely. I think one of the things, just how different it was to other music I was kind of listening to, you know, like the kind of...
Maybe more punky.
Yeah, and just the kind of spoken, you know, just really casual, like, verses, and probably inspired me a little bit, because I never sang in front of anyone till I was 19-ish. Like, when I was doing my first shows, I always just play guitar, and I think I was always just so, you know, frightened of the idea of what a good singer should be, and, you know, how they should sound. So when I kind of slowly started hearing, you know, other stuff like this, like, mm-hmm. I loved his voice.
You could do that, right? I mean,
it just kind of opened up. It was like, oh, okay, you can just, you know, naturally do what comes out of your mouth and out of your brain, and it's probably 50 times better than, you know, the person with amazing skills.
Mm-hmm. So you're playing guitars in bands before you got up on stage and did that singing thing?
Yeah, I kind of always just, yeah, was a guitarist, accompanied people and played in a couple of bands as guitar player, and yeah.
So what was that like? Was it like a open mic, or was it an actual...
The first one I did?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an open mic in Melbourne, and yeah, it was pretty terrifying.
Because did you do all your own songs?
Yeah, I think I did. I might have done a couple of covers or something, but yeah, just such a vulnerable thing.
You ever get over it? I mean, even now?
Oh, I'm definitely, I don't think I sound like I'm going to cry when I sing now, but I still get nervous, and, you know, you still... All those kind of thoughts run through your head of, well, whatever it is, I guess, like how people are perceiving you or mm-hmm. taking the songs or...
Well, in my short time of seeing you, which is CMJ in, what, was it 2 years ago maybe?
Yeah.
And seeing you now, the confidence is monumentally different.
That's good.
Yeah. It seems just like a natural flow, that there is a complete connection between your two other musicians.
Yeah.
That you sing your words... and every word seems to mean something, and you don't seem afraid. Your guitar playing is much stronger than it was even just 2 years ago. I guess some of that comes from just playing all the time.
Yeah, and I think you're right, just growing into it and feeling comfortable. And a lot of the songs, I mean, the lyrics kind of feel like they take on different meanings over time, like over the last 2 years from the first bunch of songs. Feels like they kind of take on different meanings, so I sing them with kind of different energy and different emotion.
Yeah. Last night you almost seemed like you're gonna break into tears a little. Was it a cover tune that you did? I can't remember. It was
Oh, right at the end, just by myself.
Yeah,
it's a UMI song.
Oh, UMI song.
Yeah, it's called Heavy Heart. It kind of tugs on my heartstrings a little bit, I think.
What was the line that usually when that happens to people? Is usually a line in a song that gets in the throat.
Probably, I miss you like sleep. There's nothing romantic about the hours I keep. Whew. Yeah,
that's a great line.
That's a brutal line.
I could play the UMI song, but...
Yeah, okay. I don't mind. Let's do that.
Been watching so much TV, I'm thinner than I should be, I'm like a waterlogged ball. No one wants to kick around anymore. An all-day morning hairdo that no con can get through. It's all granola and beer and a calling card and a silk-cut souvenir. I miss you like sleep, and there's nothing romantic about the hours I keep. Mornings when it starts, I don't look so sharp. Now I've got a heavy heart. Talk a lot about football. Girls are kissed in grade four. I piss off my friends. I'm digging a hole, just staring at the floor. Now every t-shirt's got a wine stain. I'm loving cigarettes again. I know every tune about guys and girls and hurts and hearts and moons. I miss you like sleep, and there's nothing romantic about the hours I keep with them. The mornings when it starts don't look so good. Now I've got a heavy heart.
I know nothing about UMI. Who are they? Where are they from? Where'd you hear them?
They're a Sydney band. They're still playing, but they were, you know, doing heaps of stuff in the 90s. I heard this song on a compilation CD when I was, I don't know, a teenager somewhere. And it just always stuck with me. And then, it's funny though, but then I didn't really get into them as much, until kind of my early 20s. It's just one of those weird things.
There are great words in that song. You missed.
Yeah.
And that.
It's one of my favourite songs.
Pick me another.
All right, so there's another Australian band called Magic Dirt. And they are one of the first, I mean, I said Darren Hanlon before, but one of the first gigs I went to when I turned 18 was Magic Dirt in this bar in Hobart, and a really small, like 200 person room or something. And it just blew me away. It totally blew me away. I hadn't really seen live music, so and this song, Vulcanella, she kind of puts down her guitar and she is Adelita is the singer. She does solo stuff now, but yeah, she put down her guitar and the other guitarist keeps playing the riff, and she walks into the crowd singing the song, because it's just like a jumble of words.
The only thing I can find was a YouTube video. It says Magic Dirt Vulcanella, and in parentheses says Billabong Detour.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think it's a festival or something.
Okay.
Let's see if it works.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear you doing that, and I can hear why you'd be an 18-year-old impressionable person, like, fall in love with it, and it's good.
Yeah.
It's really good. I know nothing about them. I'll try and find more than just a YouTube video. You say she, again, her name is...
Adelaida.
Is still making music, is it?
Yeah, she just put out a second solo album recently. Yeah, she's a huge inspiration to me. She lives in Melbourne as well, so... Yeah, and... I think I was listening to that song when I wrote Pedestrian at Best.
Oh.
So there's a bit of that in there.
Well, then we probably should play that. Pedestrian at Best, which is one of the many of, what are there, a dozen songs on the record, 11 songs on the record. Mm-hmm. One of the 11 great songs on on your new record. You must be pretty proud of this thing.
Yeah, I'm super proud of it. It's a good feeling, and to, I don't know, turn all those ideas and emotions and good and bad things into something that people can take whatever they want from it and put it in their life, or I don't know, it's cool.
Has someone come up to you at the end of a show and said something that particularly, like, struck you about what you do and how it might have affected them? Because that must happen all the time. You're very approachable. You have a very friendly manner, both on stage and then off. And that's the kind of artist that people can tend to open up to. There's a good and bad to that.
I really like hearing people's stories. Lots of people do share what they got from a certain... And it's always a different song, which is great. It's not like just one, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone has a different story, you know, like a depression type thing, or just songs helping them get through moments in their life. You know, it's nice to know that it can kind of be useful.
Yeah, well, it happened to you. I mean, people wrote songs that were useful to you. It's nice to turn it back around.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this today.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, I'll see you again tonight.
Cool.
Cheers.